extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Wow, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from Kansas City. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, back again, Matt Doyle. What's up, Matt? How was the week? Did you enjoy it? Did you check out? Did you go anywhere?
No,
did you do anything?
I completely checked out. In my mind, I was on a beach in Cabo. In reality, it was just another week in my apartment. But a week in my apartment in which I had no responsibilities and very much acted as such.
That's where we're at right now. But yep. I just want to say, as I am here in Kansas City around my parents more often, both have now gotten their first shots of the vaccine.
Yay.
So super, super happy about that. I'm waiting my turn. So is my wife. We're trying to find a way, as I believe everybody out there probably is or should be. Do it in the right way, but please do it. Please do it so we can get back in the stadium. Please do it so that my parents can see their grandchildren. Please do it so that we can all enjoy life in a way that we simply haven't been able to in the last year. So that's my quick message on that. Big show today, Steve Zakuani, the man, the myth, the legend, the guy who gets up at 6 a.m. to kickbox, will be with us. He's got his top five wingers. He's going to talk Sounders expectations for 2021. Of course, that Jordan Morris injury. We have Columbus Crew featured in this show. Why is that? Well, the MLS Cup champions, we thought they were kind of maybe cashed out, maybe on the salary cap. Nah, young money. That's what that's for. They're reloading. They're back. They're getting deeper. They're only getting better. Are they the MLS Cup favorites? We'll talk about that. And Toronto FC just keep getting mentioned with Rafael Santos Borre. I don't know if that means they're going to sign him, but it's at least worth a discussion. So we got all that coming. Big note right here. Thank you if you are listening on Sirius XMFC. We are glad to be back on Tuesday and Friday night. So thanks if you're listening then. If you're listening on Sirius and you don't listen to the podcast, you don't subscribe to the podcast, you can do it. You can do that. You can get us on Monday and Thursday night instead. Please subscribe. And if you subscribe, please rate or tell a friend that likes MLS but needs to be borderline obsessed with it. I assume that all of us listening and hearing this right now are already in that position. So pull more people in. We would really appreciate it. And maybe the biggest note before we get started here. Happy International Women's Day. And in particular, happy International Women's Day to our sister podcast, The Call Up, The Collabo, Extra Time, times The Call Up starts on Monday. We will have Jillian and Susanna here to do a little here for this, and we'll do that every single month, including an awesome prediction preview episode the Monday before the season begins. Also on Monday, our season previews start. Let's get started, guys. Let's do it. Lucas Zelarayán, speaking of the crew, he went and got inked, got a tattoo. I believe back right or left calf. I now can't remember.
Calf.
Left calf. I knew that calf. Location was very important on this one. Of the Philip F. Anschutz trophy with a nice shiny star above it. Is anybody on this podcast tatted up? Anybody got any ink?
I'm not. I've been considering one.
Really?
But I also I don't know the appropriate place to get your first tattoo.
You're focused on the body.
I mean,
so I think it's obvious for Doyle. It's
dome.
It's obvious a tattoo, giant letters across the back that say witness. Right. Under it says from my armchair. And just have that across the back.
I'm here for that. Yeah. Hold on. You are considering getting a tattoo, but you're thinking first about location, not about content of said tattoo.
I know the general idea of the content.
Cats.
Well, now I have a second tattoo line.
I think we are tattoo-less on this show.
Wait, is Doyle willing to say?
Yeah.
What is the idea?
Will you divulge?
No. I mean, that'll have to be a very special episode. Once I get the tattoo, we'll have a reveal and everything. Yeah. I want to talk about Zelarayán's tattoo, though. This is dope. The fact that, this is a guy who has played, for Boca Juniors and, was he Boca? So I'm blanking on...
He was Tigres.
He was Tigres.
Now we're going to see if Google can remember where he was in Argentina.
Or was he Independiente? I forget which Argentinian team he
Belgrano.
Okay, so he's played in these like these great derbies down in you know, in the Argentinian league. He's won almost everything there was to win with Tigres, and he came to a small market MLS team. That's what Columbus is. They're a small market team who have never bought a player like this before. And he came to this team, and in the biggest game of the year, he put out the one of the two best MLS Cup performances of all time, alongside Tony Meola. Shout out to our guy Tony. And then memorialized it like this with this tattoo. I'm actually juiced about this. I thought that like this was awesome. And if you're a Columbus fan, to see your star player A, play like that, and then B, get this permanent ink to commemorate this win and this performance after everything that had happened with Save the Crew, after everything that had happened in 2020, this nightmare year that we all lived through. If I was a Crew fan, I would be getting a tattoo of Lucas Zelarayán's face after seeing a tattoo.
Just get a tattoo of Lucas Zelarayán's calf with the tattoo on it. Just go full meta on
meta.
This.
Yeah,
go
meta.
Full meta. Now, I think the one mistake that Lucas made, mm-hmm. and I'm not, that's a great tattoo. It was beautifully done. Whoever the artist is, congratulations on that work. He should have gotten it somewhere that would be exposed during the run of play. Because as it stands, he can't point to it. You know, 85th minute, Crew up 3-1. I'd be down there like point. I'd be like, you got one of these? I got one of these. We're getting another
10,
one.
So his shin guards are
that big.
Gotcha. So it'll show. He'll be good.
He'll score. He'll roll the sock down. That's what you're saying? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Can I just sidebar on this? Because I now brought up Lucas Zelarayán's Wikipedia page, which I guess I've never looked at before. Do we know that he's Armenian? And was invited to come play for the Armenian national team.
Wow.
I have no idea.
Right? Oh my, that was what that, my face whoa. Was before when I read that.
I mean, look, I liked Lucas Zelarayán before, but I now love him.
So apparently last year he was in talks to potentially join the team. So, whoa, Lucas Zelarayán, big level up day.
I mean, Weeby is like the local expert on Armenian history, so... About to have a very special ETR podcast. Yes.
At Andrew _ Weeby on Twitter. If you would like to discuss any and all Armenian topics, I am I'm absolutely here for that. Look, we're going to talk about the Crew more. Congratulations to Lucas on the ink and being back and being ready to play. I think we got 39 days until MLS starts today. And as Rob Russery over on the Atlanta United Twitter and interweb side said, only 5 more years. Just 5 more years till the league starts. So we'll keep
this.
Waiting.
Shout out to the Minnesota United comm staff who hit me up with the new jersey. That moment when I took it out of the box this morning was the first like, oh, it's 2021 and there will be a season and we will watch it and it will be on television and people will kick a ball around. It was that first moment for me. So I feel a lot better now and I appreciate that kick that I need in Minnesota.
So is this what happens? Do like team comm staff just like hit you up and you're like, hey, do you want free stuff? Because that basically never happens for me.
Well, no, I didn't even know this was coming.
Say nicer things. I would also like to have like send a message here before we really get rolling to the Minnesota United comm staff, which is just a message of disappointment.
Here's the thing.
That nothing has showed up my door. But I would like to send out a congratulations to the Sporting Kansas City comm staff for sending over this beautiful new kit with the stripes. Got the Victory Project on the front, trying to talk into a microphone as I stand up. It is a beautiful, beautiful kit. The sponsor, I believe, if not the, is one of the only times in history that it's been a charitable organization that has been the shirt sponsor for a professional soccer team, the Victory Project here in Kansas City, all about helping kids with cancer. So, Kansas City, Sporting Kansas City, I know you're releasing this on Monday night. I got a little preview, gave my younger brother a preview who's a huge Sporting KC fan. He loves the jersey. We'll see if he can pry it from my cold dead fingers.
So, Doyle, let me just explain to you how this works.
Oh, boy.
Guaranteed the Minnesota jersey's in the mail for Weeby. Mm-hmm. And then Weeby's going to get it, and then we're going to have to deal with 2 days of tweets every 30 seconds about how thankful he is from the Minnesota because he's so thirsty that he had to slam them here for no reason. And I promise you it's on the way.
Oh,
and then he's
going
to be so nice about
it. Speaking of, here's like the only free stuff I've ever got. It's a Colorado Rapids Yeti mug. So shout out. I'm a Rapids fan now. I could be
everyone knew that
easily.
Don't worry about that, Doyle. My wife takes that to every single day to daycare. She drinks coffee out of that. She loves that mug. All right, all right, all right. Let's get to it right now. MLSsoccer.com if you want to check out some good stuff there. Tommy Scoops has a piece on FC Dallas's quest to be both a selling team as well as a team that wins big. Charlie Bohm always has good stuff on the site. A piece on the future of young players. New deals for Sam Vines and James Sands, two homegrowns. Probably including, the sort of...
including clubs from overseas that are in for Vines in particular. I didn't read the Sands one yet, but like he mentioned, I think Brentford, Barnsley, who we're going to talk about in a minute, FC Basel, which I don't want to see Sam Vines go to the Swiss league. And I think Michelin from Denmark. So
a lot of teams that really have made a reputation on the use of analytics there. So you have to wonder what those underlying stats on Sam Vines are. Probably looking pretty good for them. Wilfred Nancy, congratulations to him. We have driven the Wilfred Nancy for Club de Foot Manager train, and the train is coming to the station. He got the job, so that's awesome. Congratulations, Wilfred. Looking forward to seeing how you do with the Impact, moving on up from assistant to the head coach. And then I just want to throw out, Chicago Fire released a mic'd up segment on Twitter with Rafael Wicky. Him switching back and forth between English and Spanish, him giving tactical instruction. I literally could watch a live stream of these all day long, jumping around between teams, of training sessions, of mic'd up coaches. It really was that awesome. Let's get into it. Let's start with the Columbus Crew. We mentioned the rich getting richer. They are the MLS Cup defending champions. They went out and signed a Romanian midfielder, Alexandru. You'll remember that name. We know how to pronounce it, baby. Let's go. Maton. He's a 21-year-old. He can play in the middle. He can play out wide. He's an attacker. Tim Bezmachenko did say he plays both ways, so seems like they like the all-around game here. $1.8 million, according to the Columbus Dispatch, is the transfer fee on this, so certainly not nothing. You would think probably a Young Money signing to get this thing under the salary cap. As soon as I saw this thing, I was thinking of like Tim Bezbachinko with a cauldron of witch's brew, just like cackling like, ha 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 ha, watch me add free agents of all stripes and young designated players and make the best team in the league, according to the trophy count, even better. The depth is there. The talent is there. Forget about the image you have in your head, Doyle.
Okay, thank you. Yes.
Give me your first impressions of what the Crew have been able to do with this signing and what it might mean for them, but just the overall offseason for them.
It's been a blinder of an offseason. Like they've been as good in this offseason as they were in the postseason, and they were clearly the best team in the league in the postseason. They've just gotten stronger. Adding Bradley Wright Phillips is obviously a big one. Adding Kevin Molino, we've seen him be a match winner in big games. And now, I've never seen Maton play. He might not be worth it in the end, but he's the exact type of player. He seems the exact type of profile that you would want to spend this young money. Is that what we're calling it? Young money? Did Sam and Paul coin that officially?
Sam Stachel called me a tastemaker in their last allocation disorder, so I feel like I owe Sam a scratch on the back here. I still think they should have the Birdman call when they say young money on their podcast, but that's neither here nor there.
Anyway, it seems like the exact profile of player that makes sense for this resource, considering that Maton, he's not a complete unknown. He has first team experience. Like he has something of a profile, so you can have a pretty good idea via both film and analytics of whether or not he's going to fit that. And then the big question we had was right back, and they signed Marlon Hairston as their right back backup right back. And Marlon Hairston is proven to be a pretty talented soccer player, but for like the last 5 years, I've been dying for someone to make him a full-time right back because he just fits. And it seems like that's what Columbus is going to do. So, I mean, we did this a couple of weeks ago. I think my last episode before I took a break was like, who are the top five teams in the league? And to me, Columbus and LAFC are just clearly numbers one and two. And like, maybe Columbus is putting a little bit of distance now between themselves and LAFC.
And the thing about this young money, you know, option, and we don't know exactly how it's all going to work yet.
Even officially announced.
Yeah, right. It hasn't even.
But the thing about what Columbus is doing is there's no reliance on this player. They already brought in Kevin Molino. They have Pedro Santos and Zelrayan. They have Etienne, and they have another DP in Diaz in those attacking spots, BWP for depth at forward. And that's the ideal dream situation is this guy comes in and hits, boom, he's a starter. If not, It's not a problem for anyone. He can take his time. He can settle in the U.S. He can settle in MLS. And then you have this as an asset going forward. And that's what's been impressive now about Columbus, right, is they're building to continue to win now, but they still have ideas of how the club's going to get better going forward. And they have proof of concept. So I talked to someone. My understanding is, and I didn't know this, and I don't know if you did, they tried to get BWP last year. And he wanted to win an MLS Cup, so he went to L.A.
Oops.
So now they've won MLS Cup. So now Kevin Molino and BWP want to come to Columbus. So now they've got that ace up their sleeve as well, where going forward, they can be the team for veterans to come and finally win, and they can develop young players. And the other part of this young money, the understanding is you can also use it on homegrowns. So this is how you can keep an Io Akinola, but this is how you can keep an Aiden Morris happy and continue to bring in more homegrowns while building out your roster. So they've done everything right, and this is just another example.
And I also want to actually dap them up a little bit for loaning Seb Berhalter out to Austin. Because it's like Seb Berhalter is clearly going to be like third or fourth at best on the depth chart. They weren't going to – he's a homegrown product for them. They weren't going to use him. They did right by him to loan him to Austin. Of course, Josh Wolf is a coach at Austin, and Josh Wolf and Greg Berhalter go back 1,000 years as both teammates and then coaches. So it's not just that they're getting good players. It's that they're doing right by the players that they have. And that's the type of winning culture that makes it so that when BWP or Kevin Molino are free agents, they look around and they don't say, yeah, I want the glitz and glamour, or I want the biggest. They say, I want to go there, because they treat their players right and they win. And it feels like that is what is being built for the long haul in Columbus.
What a time to be a Crew supporter, to have saved your club, to have an executive staff, a soccer staff, a coaching staff that's accomplishing what they're accomplishing and doing this sort of long-term and short-term planning that you just desperately want as a fan of a club, to look at what's happening and say, this all makes sense, and I truly believe that it's going to work out. And then to have a stadium that's opening this year. And then to have historic Crew Stadium, which is, you know, the home of Dos Aceros and everything else, be now sort of like your community asset, training facility area, like all these different things coming online for the Crew is just, I mean, it has to make sort of hearts swell in that city for all the thousands of people that were behind one of the most incredible grassroots movements I've ever seen, certainly in sports, and you could push it off in something even bigger. I just want to say what you were saying about Aiden Morris, Dave. This is the sort of thing that goes into the Sam Vines, that goes into the Sand signings too. You can keep your guy, you can pay him, but you can also create leverage with teams overseas. Like, you don't have to sell him. This guy's making X amount of money. It's not like he's making 75 and is just going to dip out. That's your opportunity to hopefully get more out of those transfer fees if those guys are ready and keep them happy in the meantime. And then on the depth side, this is a team that's going to be hit by international breaks.
Yep.
Period. Like, look at that front line for Gold Cup in Zardes, in Molino, TNT, Derek Etienne, probably going to be with Haiti, Diaz probably going to be at that tournament as well. Like, you're going to start
Diaz is going to be at Olympic qualifying too.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to start seeing guys move out. They're going to have to rotate. They're going to have to give minutes across the board on this in this squad. But when you look at it, you're like, yeah, that makes sense. If guys have to be gone, they have the depth to deal with this. So Crew doing their thing. You mentioned sort of the top two teams in the league, though. I just want to throw this out there, see what you guys think about this. BetMGM released their MLS Cup odds, and here's how it is. Top five in order of best odds, or lowest odds, I should say, who's most likely to win MLS Cup. LAFC is number one. Seattle Sounders is number two right now. Crew is three. New York City FC is four, and the Union are five, tied with Toronto. No. What do you think about those? How would you rearrange that order? What about that order is off to you?
I would go Columbus, LAFC. I think I would put the Revs in at three right now.
Wow.
Coming off the year they had. Who am I missing right now, Doyle?
Those are a pretty good three. I think you could make an argument for Orlando City.
Yeah.
To me, the Timbers are one that you really need to throw in.
Timbers, absolutely. Timbers should actually probably be number three, even though.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah. And, you know, if you want a kind of a sleeper, which is weird to consider them a sleeper, but Atlanta with Joseph back and Gabriela Heinze, who we're all pretty convinced is going to be a good coach. we're not talking ourselves into it as we were with Frank DeBoer. Seattle seems too high, but at the same time, we know Garth Lagerwey makes a big move every summer window. Seattle could be, you know, one of the worst teams in the league in the first half of the season and could still win MLS Cup. We've seen that before.
I would say
somebody
Seattle
might even guarantee that they would miss the playoffs and then they might win MLS Cup, and they might do so with Nicolò Daria. Somebody might do that.
I would still read that man's gambling newsletter if he were to start one. I'm just saying.
I would say Seattle and Toronto both have the you trust them to make the moves. The roster is not there now, but the belief is that by September, the roster will be there because they've both proven it year in and year out, and they continue to push things and all that type of stuff.
Okay, yeah. I'm gonna send you that right now. How about this? Rafa Santos Borre over at River Plate, his contract is up June 2021. Got a couple caps with the Colombian national team, but scored a bunch of big goals for River Plate. Palmeiras is in for him as well. They just won Copa Libertadores. Should Toronto, is this the sort of profile player? Is this the position that Toronto FC should be going after? Because I think, look, it's Rafa Santos Borre, and I think, okay, you have Ayo, you have Josie. Maybe this is sort of the writing on the wall when it comes to Josie. Should they sign this type of player, Doyle? And if they did, what would happen with the squad?
So on talent and on availability, he is the exact type of player that most MLS teams should be signing, because he's like a Zela Rayan or a Babelo Reynoso, in that he's awesome, but he's not so awesome that he is in the national team, his national team picture, so he's never getting called away for you're not losing him for, you know, Copa America or World Cup qualifiers or anything. And that's kind of ideal for a lot of MLS teams. He's in his prime. He's done it in, you know, the second biggest club tournament in the world in Copa Libertadores. And he's obviously done it in massive rivalry games and, you know, for River Plate. It's weird for Toronto. It's weird because they have Josie on what I think is an unmovable contract. I just don't like that. Nobody in the league is going to take Josie. Like, unless they can sell him to a team in, you know, China or Saudi Arabia, or maybe one of the big Liga MX clubs would maybe have interest because they make some questionable moves. But you have Josie as a center forward, and then you have Ayo, who, you know, I think 10 goals in 1,100 minutes last year and, like, looks the part. These weren't lucky goals. He was setting defenders up with his off ball. Like, this is the exact type of young player that you're supposed to build around. So if I'm Toronto, I'm looking more towards using an open DP slot on a winger, on a guy who will be able to, you know, set up 15 goals instead of score 15 goals, because you already have these two assets as a center forward. Adding Santos Borre on top of that does not seem like optimal roster build, like allocation of resources.
So I understand what you're saying totally, especially in a salary cap league, but I disagree a little in that one. And Weeby, you sort of said it with the young player money thing. The reason these deals work is because you secure them to sell them. Right. And that's the future for Ayo. And Borre's 25. Mm-hmm. And again, with Josie, you don't know if he's going to be healthy and you don't know what you're going to do with that contract. But if you have the ability to sign this player, especially on a free, if he's coming off his contract, you get him in. That's your spine. That's your future, him and Pasuelo. And you figure out the rest. And I think that's one of the other things for the teams that push things in this league is they're able to find ways out of it because they're pushing that barrier. And everyone always complains about the Galaxy. But when other teams ask, they get the opportunity to push things because that's the league wants to grow and all those opportunities. So I think if you're Toronto FC and this exact deal is available, you bring him in and you figure out the rest of it around it and you figure out the rest of it later. Especially if you want to win now and later, you don't know that Josie's going to be healthy in the playoffs. And you don't know that Io's also not going to be at Gold Cup and the Olympics or whatever else he's going to be a part of. And if DK scores the way he does and other guys are doing well, you don't know that the deal won't come in to get rid of him. So I just think, or to sell him on, I think that if this deal is available the way it looks like it might be, it makes sense to just get him in and then build around that.
Is this also perhaps a tell that Chris Armas might want to go to a two forward setup?
Could be,
because that was something he tried repeatedly with the Red Bulls. It never worked. the Red Bulls were always better playing with actual wingers, even under Jesse Marsh, who tried it a million times when he was head coach and now plays with two forwards in Salzburg. If they sign Santos Borre, do you think that this is a sign for Toronto FC that they will be going to either a 4-4-2 or a 3-5-2?
I think they're probably already there, right? If Ayo and Josie are both healthy, that's already the setup that makes sense with them. Mm-hmm. Ayo has proven that he is not comfortable on the wing, and he's a starter on this team.
I think
they're already there, and this is just more depth and opportunity to do that. But it feels, coming into the season, like that's what Toronto's set up for already.
Can I just throw out a couple teams? And we see this happen sometimes where it's like, oh, the Galaxy are in for. Oh, this team is in for. And then that player goes somewhere else.
Like, hey, MLS negotiating with Jack Wilshere because he's going to play for MLS.
Yes.
Big signing for MLS.
In this case, if I'm just saying, hey, Minnesota, you don't got a center forward, Reynoso, maybe you get him in. Get him. LAFC, you don't got one either. I know you've been trying to do the sell-on thing, but this might be the title for you. Austin, you don't got one. Hijack the deal. Get Rafael Santos Borre in the league. I don't care where he goes. I don't know.
Danny Trusen erasure.
Well, they got Ariel Lassiter, dude. They don't need to worry about all that. Some other stuff here before we get to Steve Zakuani.
Aaron Schoenfels, you mean?
Yeah, well, he's down the depth chart just a little bit. And he was
Who's
just
Ariel
in
Lassiter plays for Houston. You're on two.
I thought we said he
now.
Just said don't. He said don't throw Houston out.
No, he said Danny Houston.
Oh, well, whoops. That was a miscommunication on my part.
I was like,
part.
Where did that come from?
All right. Vancouver's been linked to yet another midfielder. We'll see if they get it done. Brazilian guy, 22 years old, would be what we think if it becomes official, Young Money. That would be a box-to-box. They'd still be looking for a 10, it would seem, or maybe they're going to convert him a little bit. I'm not sure.
No, everything coming out of Vancouver is that this wouldn't be the 10, that they're still looking for a DP10. But okay. Botafogo were relegated, so there's an idea that they're... Because we've seen what's happened with São Paulo, Brenner already, and a few other players.
Every Brazilian team, except for Palmeiras and Flamengo, are like... huge financial dire straits. So
this is why it feels like this year more Brazilian signings than Argentine, or it's going to be disproportionate to the amount of players that have come from Brazil to MLS over the last few years.
Okay, if I was going to sign from Brazil right now, I'd put as much time as I could between the Brenner signing and when I made that signing. I'm like, you guys, no, don't even look at that one. Those numbers don't matter. Before we get to Steve Zakuani, just real quick, I'm going to read this statement. You probably saw it in the news. Major League Soccer has launched a formal review of Inter Miami's signing of Blas Matuidi. League announced that in a statement on Friday. Matuidi, we know he was signed from Juventus in August 2020. We talked about that being a TAM deal. The league statement said the investigation will center on whether the signing complies with salary budget and roster guidelines. You can see that full statement at MLSsoccer.com. That's going to be an interesting story to watch. Let's get to Steve Zakuani right now, the man, the myth, the legend. Steve, what's up, man? Welcome to Extra Time.
Guys, always a pleasure. Glad to be on.
All right, AT&T 5G call to the field starts right now. Steve, we just got done doing, before we get to Seattle, before we get to Jordan Morris, before we get to your top five wingers in the league, we just had some issues, let's say, with BetMGM's top five MLS Cup squads, who they think is most likely to win this thing. I just want one team from you. No context about our conversation, no nothing. Who would you have right now? You got to predict MLS Cup, and somebody will hold you to it. Maybe not us, but somebody else. Who would it be?
Columbus Crew.
Why?
No, you just said no context.
No, I said no context about what we said, not about what he's going to say.
He didn't say no explanation. He said no prior context.
Okay.
They're very well built, and I think they've got better in the offseason. And I think with Caleb, with an extra year with that group, from what I saw last year, they just got stronger and stronger. Good in attack, good in defense. And like I said, I think in the offseason, they actually improved.
Let me ask you this. With Caleb, we've seen him take teams to great heights before. That 2013 Timbers team, which almost won the Supporters Shield, they played gorgeous soccer. 2015 obviously won MLS Cup. But every year, 2013 almost won the Shield, 2014 missed playoffs. 2015 win MLS Cup, 2016 missed playoffs. Like, he's never made the playoffs twice in a row. He's never been able to sustain that. Is this just noise, just like a complete anomaly, or is there something that he has to change, do you think, in this year for the Crew to be as good as we all think they can be?
I think it's an anomaly, because I think the reason that 2013 Portland team was very good, but he got to 2014, I think he began to doubt himself. He said, I played all this great football, did all this great stuff, and it still wasn't enough. So in 2014 and 2015 especially, he began to really tweak his tactics a little bit. And I think now with Columbus, because they've won, he knows his star works. He's going to dig in his heels, keep doing that. And I think they have the right balance, the right players. I think they'll be fine.
You know him much better than we do, Steve. What do you think he has learned the most as a coach during his time in MLS? Like, you kind of alluded to it there, but I wonder with Caleb, like, where has he gotten, maybe not self-critical is the best way to put it, but where has he focused and seen the most growth as a manager?
I think there's two things. One, he's learned that you can't coach pros how you coach college players, because he was very successful at Akron, but I felt even in his early years with the Timbers, there was still a lot of the college way of coaching. And he's learned now to coach professionals in a different way. And he's good now also. He calls them the piano players and the piano carriers, coaching both. So the piano players, your Nagbys, your Zella Rians, people like that, you got to coach them in one way at times. And then some of your piano carriers, the guys who work hard and just there to make tackles and break up the play, you sometimes coach them in a different way with the demands. And so I think he's learned the balance of each player has to be coached differently. I can't just coach one voice fits all for the team. It doesn't work.
I gotta get Singer as a sponsorship for the Columbus crew, as a piano sponsor. Get every piano carrier their own piano.
Let me ask you this. Is Jossy Zardes a piano player or piano carrier?
That's a great question. But I would say he's a piano player because he scores goals. The most important thing to do in football is to score goals. Mm-hmm. And his goal scoring record is there. The way he plays doesn't look so elegant at times, easy on the eye. But his scoring record, especially in Columbus, has been phenomenal.
It is, but he's also a piano carrier, right? Because if you look at the unselfish stuff that he does, the unselfish runs he makes, the defensive work that he does, like he really is willing to take a less glamorous role, even though technically speaking, his job is the most glamorous there is.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think him and I think Nagbe falls in that category as well, where Nagbe should be purely a piano player. He's one of the most fun players to watch, but he does the dirty work. Rosie sleeves up, tracks back, defends, does what the team asks. And Zardes is a bit like that. So, yeah, he probably is a bit of both. But because Zardes scores so many goals, I think he ends up being in a category of special players.
I think that Doyle might be, I mean, he requires some special gloves. Maybe a piano player 100%. On this side.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Billy Joel definitely. Down there.
Yeah, we got to cater to him a little bit. I think Dave and I probably more piano carriers, if we're being honest with our
that's them kicking me out of the discussion. Okay, guys, not at all.
This was great. Normally you're like, so I don't want to be yeah
that Steve just taught us this terminology. First of all, I'm only calling Caleb piano man from here on out, both in person whenever I see you and whatever, but this is exciting.
It is awesome. Steve, we talked about this before, and this is a personal question, so feel free to throw this off if you don't want it. None of us have tattoos, but Lucas Zelarayán does. He went and got that MLS cup on his calf. Would you get, or have you gotten, a soccer-based tattoo?
I have not, and I wouldn't. I wouldn't get MLS cup on my body. I just wouldn't.
What are his teammates saying to him? Are they like, everybody's down for it because they all want it together? Are they like in the locker room, like giving a little stick?
In the moment, probably everyone's happy and down for it. I think once it sinks in and you know you start seeing him every day with an MLS cup, it's going to look weird, man. So I think there'll be a lot of banter.
Can I ask, anybody in Seattle get the cup tattoo? They had a couple opportunities here.
I don't think anyone got a cup tattooed. I think Stephen Fry did get a tattoo on his right hand, or whichever hand he used to make the save on Josie Altidore. He got some kind of tattoo to commemorate that. I'm not sure what it was, but that's the closest we got, I think.
That's a dope thing to do.
That's a flex.
To make the greatest save in MLS Cup history and then be like, for the rest of your life, you see this? This is what
I would honestly just get the silhouette of myself making that save, because it's like, let me tell you about this right here.
Zelarayán scored with both feet in cup, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, yep. So left or right, it didn't matter which one he put it on. It still has that sort of symbolism, I guess. Let's talk about the Sounders, and let's just start with Jordan Morris. We were all so excited for Jordan to go to Swansea, to have this opportunity, whether it be there or maybe somewhere else, depending on how he performed. He had just started to sort of get his feet under him a little bit, and now obviously back in Seattle rehabbing yet again. You've experienced devastating injuries in your time. What is your feeling after you sort of saw this and thought about it? What's your feeling for Jordan? I know you know him well.
It's brutal, honestly. My heart sank when I heard, you know, because we kind of had heard internally before the news came out that it was official. We'd heard that it's probably going to be this. And I was speaking to a couple of people inside the club, and we're just devastated for him, because I was like, finally, you know, go over there. I know he can do it. I've had these conversations with him, and I think Jordan's someone who he had a lot to prove, and he was excited to get there. I think he wasn't quite fit yet. He was getting up to speed, but I felt he'd play a big role in the running for that team. And then once I heard, I just felt so bad. So I gave it maybe a few days, and then, you know, I reached out to him, and, you know, he seems to be in good spirits. But I think having had to overcome this before, do so well, become a much better player, become, for me, he's in my top five wingers in the league, Jordan Morris is, easily. And then to have this, and he's going to have to do it again, I just wish him the best. And I just, here in Seattle, honestly, we're just devastated, because he had just got this move and he was on the up and up, and to have that, it's very tough to take.
What's Steve, it mean? Go ahead.
I want to ask this, because we kind of talked about it on this show, and, you know, it sucks. This is what we have to do. It's a devastating thing for him. We have to sports talk and stuff around it. But I think of Jordan Morris and his career arc and where he stands and where Seattle stands. And it's different from the outside to me than for Clint Dempsey. The New England Revolution at that time, where MLS stood, was never going to be enough. And DeMarcus Beasley in Chicago, they always wanted to go to Europe. It feels like with the way this has happened, Jordan Morris, if it doesn't happen in Europe, is that something that's going to devastate him because he gets to win cup in front of 60,000 fans every week at his home stadium? Like, is Jordan Morris set that he has to play in Europe at some point in his career?
I think so. And I'm surprised I'm saying this, because I think when I had convos with him 2-3 years ago, I didn't get that sense. He said more, and if it happens, it happens. But he was very happy in Seattle. But I think with two cups, being such a key player, Rudy as is what he is, Ladero is what he is. But in a lot of ways, Jordan's the key man, because when he's on, it just unlocks Rudy as it unlocks Ladero. So I think Jordan realized that, of how good he can be. And I think what's left for him is he knows he can do it in front of his family and friends here, where it's a bit safe still. Very challenging, but safe. Can he go overseas and do it? I think he wanted to prove that to himself. So I think it will bother him, because coming back to Seattle, there's nothing more for him to do. We know he can score double-digit goals. He can run past anyone he wants. He's a big key player for the team. He's won trophies. Europe now was that next step for him to show that he's maybe not just this pace and power. He's a bit more technical, cerebral, understands the game, and he would have been able to show that in Europe. But then this happened, so that's why it's unfortunate.
What does this mean for the Sounders in 2021? Because we already knew he was going to be gone for a while. There was a possibility, which we talked about with Garth, that he could come back. I mean, that didn't seem like the most likely possibility, let's say. But now what? What are the right expectations for this particular team?
I think because you have the same coaching staff, Brian Schmetz, and you have Garth, I can't go against this team that's done that. But I think the Sounders haven't got better in the offseason. I think I'd be, and I can be as biased as I want, but I'd be lying if I said they got better. This is not a better team than they were last year. I think changes had to be made, but you've lost experience. I mean, no, Leerdam, Svensson, these are very, very important players, not only on the pitch, in the locker room, steadying the ship and things like that. And you knew you wouldn't have Jordan anyway. Where do you get the 10 goals, 5 to 10 assists? If not Jordan, does Christian Roldan have to do more? Does Rudiaz have to do a bunch? What's Montero going to be like? There's a lot of question marks. I think a lot more than you would like for a team of this caliber with this kind of expectation. I don't think the Sounders have got better. I think they'll be good. How good is tough to tell.
What's next for this team? Like, I was looking at a chart earlier today, and shout out to MLS Reddit, always has great stuff on it. And this was sort of a collection of 99s and younger total minutes in MLS. And the Seattle Sounders were basically at the very bottom. So, like, we know that Schmetzer in the past has not been big into playing the kids. They're starting to get that academy pipeline going with Tacoma. But they win championships. You sign these big players, and Garth does, goes in the summer. We see him go get Rui Diaz and Ladero. You have the homegrowns in Morris and lesser so to Roldan. I consider him like an honorary homegrown. He's not. But like, what is the next step for the Seattle Sounders? Like, they've won cups, they've competed for it. Is it just to try to stay and be this team? Can in 2021 sort of a youth movement come to pass in any way? Like, what can they do this year to sort of set it apart from previous years?
Yeah, I think it's very tough, because in this league, I think the question is, can you do both? Can you be a youth developing factory and also consistently win year after year? I mean, Dallas has been trying to do it for years. I think it's very tough to do. The Sounders, they're in a tough spot because they've set the bar so high, never missed the playoffs, you know, always seem to get to MLS Cup. Going away from that, I don't care how many 17-year-old kids you have running around the pitch and we're not in the playoffs, we're not going to be happy. So the bar set. So what's new for Seattle is consistency. Keep doing what you've been doing. The reason this club is held in such regard is because they win. The Sounders win. The Sounders are always there. They get trophies. First it was Open Cups. Then it was, you know, never missing the playoffs. And now it is MLS Cup. So you can play a bunch of youth players. It won't change what we want as fans. We want the team to be winning. And so that's a tough thing in MLS. Can you do both? And I'm not sure it can be done consistently.
Garth's going to have to figure that one out. Before we get to your top five wingers, how about this one? I put out MVP candidates for all 27 teams. Some were not realistic, never going to happen. But there, you know, we all know the pool. We know the pool. MVP is going to come out of like eight guys. That's just the way it works. You have to have a certain profile. You have to have the ability to produce in a certain way. And not just because you have to win MVP, because you have to be better than all the other guys who could win MVP. We asked for your early MLS Cup pick. You went with the Crew. Are you? Would you take an MVP off the Crew, or would the regular season Landon Donovan MLS MVP come from elsewhere, in your opinion?
I won't take off the Crew. That award is Carlos Vélez as long as he wants it, because there's just nobody as good as him. Like, even, I remember watching him last year, because he wasn't quite what he was the year before, but he still does stuff that no one else even dreams or imagines. So I think a rested, motivated Carlos Vela, no one's going to be better than him. And if we're all honest as voters and people that have input into this award, it's going to be him. I don't see anyone being better than him.
I cannot disagree with Steve.
He's almost like a top five winger in this league, right?
I don't know. But TBD, we shall find out. I just want to say on that point, it's 95% chance to me, and maybe those odds are inflated, that Carlos Vela, if healthy, he wins it. Like, to me, if he's healthy and he can play more than 28 games, he's going
Doyle's
to win this
thing. Shaking his head because there's a guy in Atlanta who's going to dunk on everyone for the next 9 months.
Like, what happens if Joseph Martinez comes back after an ACL
plays like Joseph
tear,
Martinez?
And like Jordan Morris is actually better after the ACL tear. Like, Joseph Martinez could have something. You know who, like, if you want to go like dark horse, who should not be considered a dark horse? What if Inter Miami gets right and Gonzalo Higuain goes for 25 and 15? Gonzalo Higuain was like an amazing player in his prime, and he's like a year older than Carlos Vela.
Yeah, but 25 and 15 is light work for Carlos Vela. That's light work. He's like, that's not even a good year for me. Like, I don't know. 25 and 15? I'm disappointed.
I think you guys are expecting Carlos Vela to put together another, what did he have, 34 and 15? Like, another 29
season? No. But I think within his powers, 25 and 15 for Carlos Vela is much more achievable and attainable and realistic than it is for anybody else in the league. It's not even close.
So my dark horse stat stuffer, where it's like he's pushing records and you're going to have to notice, is Reynoso. If Reynoso puts up 30 assists or whatever crazy number and keeps blowing things out, it's going to be, they probably won't be top two or three seed in the West, but you're gonna have to mention him every time we have this conversation, and I guarantee you we will. And he'll be in that storyline.
All you have to do is get him Santos Borre to start feeding.
Exactly. See, I tried to seed it. He doesn't have his Roy Lassiter. He can't be Carlos Valderrama if he doesn't get his Roy Lassiter. He doesn't have that right now. Who's he feeding?
Foster Langsdorf. So back up.
That's fine. All right, let's do it. Steve Zakuani's top five wingers in Major League Soccer. We're doing this series for the next couple shows to get you hyped about the 2021 season. Steve, take it away. Start at number five for us, okay?
Okay, number five. So I'm going to give an honorable mention first.
Okay.
He doesn't. I don't know if he'll be here this year or not if he's loan, but I really, really like Brian Rodriguez. I know he hasn't lit up the stat sheet, but I just see so much potential there. He's very dangerous. Every time he plays, he tries things. And once he puts it together, he'll be there. But he's not quite there. Five, I go Johnny Russell, because I love watching this guy play. I think at times, you know, he kind of goes under the radar for whatever reason. But when he's on at his absolute best, left, right, strong, powerful, tries things, can score hat-trick, can do whatever he wants, I go Johnny Russell. Number four, Pedro Santos. Number four. Very good player. Very technical player. I know Nagby's high on him. I talk to Darlington all the time, and he's very, very high on him. So I go with him there. Number three, I thought this guy was the best player in the league in the playoffs, Kevin Molino. And I think going now to this team in Columbus, they're going to feed him, and he's going to be so good for them. What a pickup. So I think he's third for me. Second, I know he's injured. I know he might not play this year, but I have to say Jordan Morris, because this is, I'm biased and everything, but he's really good. He's really good. Like, as a winger in this league, I don't know what more you would want someone to be doing. He does everything now as a winger. He's very, very good. Double-digit goals from the wings, not easy. And number one, I'm going to go Diego Rossi, number one, because he proved without Vela last year. It was unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable player. And I'm not including Carlos Vela because he's a forward.
But wait, if he's a forward...
Isn't Rossi a forward?
Rossi's a winger.
Okay,
Rossi's more of a forward than Vela is. Rossi's just like a wide forward. Vela's like the textbook definition of a winger.
If I was playing, if I was a manager, I'd play Carlos Vela number nine. I'd actually play him in the middle. I'll put him close to the goal, and Rossi would always play out wide for me. He's not going to play in the middle. So I'd be more 4-3-3. Rossi's more on my left than.
Okay. Wow. This is Steve's list.
Wait. So like, what about Sebastian Blanco?
I have to see him again. He actually was my MVP early runner last year before he got injured. He was on his way. That's a case of out of sight, out of mind.
But is he going to be a winger this year?
Yeah, is he? Yeah. I think he's more central.
But isn't he going to be a 10 this year with Yumi Chara having stepped up and starting?
He's going to be a winger. Jimmy's going to be on the other wing. Valeri's still going to be the 10. And then, you know, either Mora or Bobasi is going to be the starting center forward.
I don't know that Valeri's the 10. Interesting. He wasn't when Blanco, during MLS is back, and then obviously.
Yeah, he was. By the time Valeri got healthy and they had that starting lineup the final few games, it was Blanco on the wing and Valeri central as a number 10.
We could argue about that all day. I'm going to jump in here. I'm going to throw some other names out there just because we're celebrating winners.
I have one big one.
I can't believe Steve wants Carlos Vela as a number 9. The guy is like, he's like the definition of what you want on the freaking wing.
I just can't put him as a winger. If I put him as a winger, he just knocks too many people off. He's going to be number 1 forward, nice. Number 1 left wing, number 1 right wing. He's Carlos Vela. But
Steve's just trying to protect the wingers community by keeping Vela out.
We don't need him.
The big miss for me, and I don't disagree with anyone on your list, I'll accept the Vela Rossi debate, was Chris Mueller.
Yep.
And I know you put Jordan on, and I voted Jordan over Chris Mueller in like my best 11s in comparing the two last year. But if Jordan's missing the season, I would put Mueller back
on
the
list. So Mueller's a bigger miss than Nani?
I think so, yeah. For the breadth of the whole last season and then going...
I just want to make sure Orlando City fans know that's from Steve and not from me, because Orlando City fans are vicious.
By the way, Twitter. Crew fans are just celebrating out here. They're like, we got two top 5 wingers, then we got Derek Etienne and Luis Diaz just hanging back in the cut.
If you have unanimity amongst the extra time podcast that you guys are going to win MLS Cup, which apparently you have at this point, you have no chance at winning. No chance at all.
Yeah, good luck with that one. How about this? Can I throw out some underrateds? Lewis Morgan, I think, is an underrated.
Yeah, he was excellent.
Yeah, he was nice last year. Yeah.
He was really good. Mm-hmm. He was really, really
any,
good.
Any other names we would throw into this conversation as we...
So there's the unknowns, which is Cecilio Dominguez as a new DP for Austin.
That's a good one.
Diver Casado and Yadier O'Brien.
Edison Flores, we didn't really get to see him. He was excellent with Monarca. Well, the team formerly known as Monarcas Morelia in that last year in Liga MX. If he plays on the wing, but we don't even know if Losada is going to use wingers, right? We don't know what's going to happen with the Red Bulls, if they're going to bring in anyone who would be a high-level winger. But Struber has preferred to use two forwards, so there's not really a winger there. Is there a Chris Mueller that we see, like someone who we all agreed was like a pretty good player, but then jumps up to almost best 11 level?
Is a Bobby a forward then, or is he a winger?
I think he's a 9. I think he's just a clear number 9. I like, yeah, like,
but he doesn't play for your team, so
yeah, you know,
unfortunately,
who
his coach may not agree with that. Yeah,
his coach came on the show and said, no, he's not a 9. I don't care what Jason Christ says. He'll play wherever I want him to play, basically. That's what he said. How about Christian Espinoza? I know it's not a Mueller situation, slightly different backgrounds, but Christian Espinoza could be like jumps into best 11 category, I think.
I mean, he has to put the ball in the net, right? He's one of the best playmaking wingers that we have in the league in terms of picking the final pass. He has been, you know, he plays for a San Jose team that you know is going to play wide open soccer and is going to generate chances, and he's a huge part of that. But he had, what, 2 goals his first year and 3 his second year? You can't be one of the best wingers in the league if those are the numbers you're putting up.
How about Darwin Quintero?
So that was – that's a question. He was a 10 for a chunk of the season when he was putting up stats towards the end for Houston, and it feels like he will be this year as well.
I'm not sure about that. I think that Tab will use him inverted on the left, and I'm not sure he's even a starter, because as No, he's a
I know.
Like he has that ability to make spectacular plays, but he also hurts his team with the turnovers. It would just like it's like almost like a heliocentric NBA offense where it's like, okay, we're just gonna live with, you know, James Harden shooting 35 times a game, and if he goes 12 for 35, oh well, that's how Darwin Quintero plays soccer, and it gets him some great stats, but it also puts his team into some really bad position in terms of, you know, turnover after turnover after turnover.
Fine. How about this one? Before we get to my center backs, I have the Chris Mueller candidate, yeah. Jonathan Lewis.
Yeah, it was obvious. Also, consider him a winger and he plays well, Nomley's the other one because he's a DP and there's expectations. But Jonathan Lewis is the obvious, like, young American to rise. And then Nomley. And the other one, we mentioned Dyber Caicedo, but if Vancouver's, like, good and going forward, Dahomey is effective and can play. He's just not the guy you build an offensive around. So now he can kind of do what Jordan did, right, where it's Nico gets focus, Rui Diaz gets focus, and now he's just running at guys 1v1.
All right, those are the wingers. We'll give you first chance, Steve, to tear apart my center backs list, so prepare your sharpest knives. Let's start at number 5. This is my top 5 center backs in Major League Soccer. Number 5, we'll start with honorable mentions. If Icopara was going to play this year, he would be at the very top of this list. We don't know if he will or not, so I just can't include him right now, though I would definitely want to. Antonio Carlos, that's going to be one for me that is an honorable mention. What he did with Orlando last year and really helping them level up was massive, and Janssen was very good next to him as well. Miles Robinson, maybe he could be in this list. He would have been, I think, last preseason probably,
sure,
but not this preseason. So let's get it started. This is an arguable one here, and I'll let you guys come at me if you want to. I have Aaron Long, number 5. And I know that last year was not a vintage year for Aaron Long, but I think on the grand scheme of talent, of ability, on the odds of bouncing back with a new coach who will put him back in the positions that he was so comfortable and effective in with Jesse Marsh, I think Aaron Long absolutely has a chance to have a huge resurgence season. And I think just on talent and potential here to perform in 2021, he's going to be 5 for me. Any disagreement there? Yes. Okay. Come at me.
There would be zero shock if Aaron Long was the defender of the year in 2021.
But he is currently not a top 5 center back in MLS. We know there are 5 center backs that we've seen in this league.
There are 5. If you were playing a big game tomorrow, you could name 5 center backs you would want ahead of Aaron Long.
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll give you the rest of my list, and you guys can put in who you would put
then
in.
Give the list.
Number four. He's quietly been one of the most effective, best center backs in this league for basically a decade now. I have Matt Hedges of FC Dallas at number 4. You just ride him into the lineup. You put the C on him. He is usually mistake free and has gone through a good number of center back partners and a lot of young players around him. So I have Matt Hedges at number 4. At number 3, I have Eddie Segura. Jesus Murillo can probably get a shout in here as like a complimentary piece to Segura. Both of them together were very, very good, but I have Eddie Segura at 3 for LAFC. At 2, and this is really 2 and 1, stand head and shoulders above, I have Jonathan Mensah at 2 for Columbus Crew. What he did in the playoffs, what he did through the entirety of last season is just unreal. And then number 1, I have Walker Zimmerman, the defending defender of the year. I just think all things considered, his threat on set pieces, certainly we know how dangerous he is there, but what he was able to provide as far as a foundation and as really like a force multiplier for Nashville last year, Dave Romney, the rest of the back line, Willis in front of him with those defensive midfielders. I mean, he was in so many times like the basis of what they were doing and building around. Walker Zimmerman is my number 1. So 5, Aaron Long, 4, Matt Hedges, 3, Eddie Segura, 2, Jonathan Mensah, and number 1, Walker Zimmerman. So who's coming in for Long? Did I make any other big mistakes in here? Are we okay with this list?
There is a big omission. So 2 of them are good. Your top 2, fair. Mensah, Zimmerman belong. Segura,
no,
Hedges,
don't do this.
And Long, I will tell you right now that Yema is better than
Ofeigbo. Oh my God.
Without question. Yema is better than Ofeigbo. Without question.
This. We have to deal with this from Anders every show, and now Steve is coming in.
It's a good shout.
Do you think that Yamar, for organizing a back line, defending 1v1, and then playing out of the back, that he's the 3rd best center back in MLS?
Yes. he's fantastic, honestly. No, he doesn't get beat. Really good chasing down fast strikers into the channels. Very physical, strong in the air. He's only going to get better. He's definitely better than Segura, without question. He's better than Hedges, and he's better than Long right now. 100%. Only Mensah and Zimmerman, I would say, are above him. Yema, 100% is there.
This is why we have Steve on the show.
Yeah.
To come with the no Carlos Vela in the wingers, and then to just tear me apart on my center backs. Deservedly so. Look, I had him in like Chris Mavinga in my honorable mention as well, but you can't list. Dave would get on me. He would say, I'm just listing everybody in the position and I'm cheating like normal.
Chris Mavinga is barely healthy. I don't know that he's top five.
Mavinga
anymore.
For me is like, could he be there after 2021? Sure. He has that ability. No. Is he there right now? No.
Alex Kayans is the one that you completely ignored, who is probably on this list. I still think Eddie Segura is the best center back in MLS. And part of the disservice that we've all done to him is we connected him and Zimmerman, and you already did it in your list, Weeby, where you connected him and Murillo. He doesn't get talked about as an individual player. This is a guy who could probably play defensive midfield and be one of the better ones in MLS. Low center of gravity, can run anyone down, doesn't get beat 1v1, clean on the ball, brave on the ball, like will make dangerous passes. I understand they were bad defensively, but no center back is good enough to carry a team completely. And I've said this multiple times, it's awesome what Walker Zimmerman did, but they play eight in the back, and it's not that it's easy, but it's a different role for what he has to do. And he did it well. Congratulations. He's definitely top five. He's definitely top three, but he's not number one.
All right. So look, Gary Smith right here. I'll just give you the quote. Quote, they play eight in the back. That goes right up on your whiteboard right now, man. Like straight up on that whiteboard. When you're guiding these guys through in preseason, you're like, we're playing more expansive this year. Like that Yahoo over at MLS Soccer and Extra Time, David Goss said we play eight in the back. What do we say to that, boys?
Let's put nine back there. Let's pack it in.
Beep, beep, beep. All right, Steve, we appreciate your time, man. It's been always great to chat with you. Tell people how they can get at you.
Twitter, honestly, the best. I haven't been on social media for a while. But I'll be
smart
back.
Move. Yeah, smart move.
Took a little break, but I'm back now in Washington. So, yeah, once the MLS season gets rolling here, I know Sounders just started preseason, so I'll start getting a few updates. So we'll be Twitter, man, just Zakwani11 on Twitter. And then, you know, I'm looking forward to the season, honestly, man, so I'm excited.
Same. And if you need some motivation out there, if you feel like maybe during this pandemic you've not been your best self, just know that Steve gets up at 6 every day to kickbox. So yeah. Think about that. When your alarm goes off and you want to turn it off, think, what would Steve Zakwani do? He would get up. He would get a sweat in. Steve, appreciate you, man.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, man.
Big thanks to Steve Zakwani, one of our favorites on this show. Always got some great takes, and appreciate the pushback there on me for Sounders fans. I'm sure I'll hear from you as well. Go to @ExtraTime. We've got all of our top five lists going there. You can debate them with us. Also, before every show, we're putting out a tweet asking for questions for the show. And if we don't get to them, which we're about to try to, we will go through and answer those on Twitter. So Extra Time on Twitter. Remember, subscribe, rate, support us, all that stuff. If you've listened to this long, what, you're like 55 minutes in, you might as well prophesize a little bit for us. All right. Thank you.
I always like to think that there's one person out there who's like a big fan of like antique clocks or like the concept and philosophy of time, who has listened to this show for years thinking at some point it's going to be about Extra Time and not about soccer. I dream that that person still exists.
That was really weird.
I didn't follow that at all.
That was bizarre.
I feel both stupid and
this
also.
This is what happens when we put David in the bottom box. Usually he's top right, and now he's in the bottom.
I'm a piano carrier now. I'm not a piano player.
It's chaos,
anymore.
Man. It's chaos. I want to get your take, Doyle, before we get to the mailbag here. 401-206-0MLS, extratimeandmlssoccer.com, about Daryl DK. Because he busted out the pile driver, man. Some of these other goals have been, you know, some have been scrappy, little header in the box, muscles his way in. We both know you debated that first goal that he scored to the end of time.
We were debating the soccer played around the goal by Barnsley FC and whatever other B team, because every team in the championship starts with B.
Well, they've won all seven of his appearances now, Daryl DK's. He played a little volleyball this weekend, but Daryl came out and smashed one top corner. I mean, what do you think about what Daryl's done in Europe?
Well, first of all, the volleyball clip, I believe Anders tweeted it from the official account. If you have not seen this clip of Barnsley versus who were they? I don't even remember who they were.
Probably
a B. Another B team. It was 30 seconds, but sped up. It was like 1.5 speed of just headers. Back and forth between the, it is like the antithesis of entertaining soccer borderline unwatchable, but that's how small budget teams in the championship play. Go ahead, David.
It was against Birmingham.
It was against Birmingham.
It was a B team.
It was literally was another B team. Anyway, amazing. And this is how, so the debate that David and I had about that first goal that Daryl DK scored was about the play leading up to it. And that was actually a nice little bit of play. He found space in the box. There was a reverse pass. They punished a team for not getting their line out fast enough after a corner kick. That was a nice goal. His second goal was he got near post on a corner kick and just out-muscled the guy and a flick header. It was wonderful. And if you watch Barnsley play, which I honestly do not recommend, I cannot recommend enough to spend your 90 minutes doing anything other than watching Barnsley play soccer. But if you watch them play, you will see Daryl DK gets fouled on literally every corner kick, like straight up rugby tackles, two guys running against him because they cannot handle his level of physicality. And beyond the level of physicality, we know because we watched him play here that Daryl DK is a very smart soccer player. He understands the runs that a forward has to make. So he puts that pressure on the team. And then from this past weekend, his goal was he got in a little space at the top of the box and he put his laces through it. He hit the ball so hard it forgot how to spin and went upper 90. And now he has three goals in the past four games. He is looking the part of a guy who is not just dominant physically, but is a solution, a one-man solution to a team whose only idea is how to in terms of how to play, is to play long balls to a dude's head. And like that's great, and I'm happy for him, and I hope to God it leads him into another team that has a more ambitious and aesthetically pleasing style of play, because Daryl DK can do that as well. Daryl DK is not just a big guy who you lump long balls at, not just a big guy who can manhandle defenders. He is an actual soccer player, and he is showing that in flashes for Barnsley, and he might end up getting them promoted. But I hope that he plays so well that someone else who, again, has a more expansive idea of how soccer should be played actually comes in and gives Orlando City the type of godfather offer that Daryl DK's talent warrants.
They are sixth right now in the championship, are Barnsley.
21 points from 21 with Daryl DK on the field.
That's worked out pretty well for them. They're 1 point ahead of another B team, Bournemouth. And they are 6 points back of another team, Brentford, that starts with a B. And now we will only consider teams in the championship that start with B. So among the B teams, they're in second place in the championship. It's awesome to watch Daryl DK do his thing. It's really been a pleasure. The highlight clips that I've watched, not the full game action of Barnsley that I've watched. Other news in Europe, MLSers, Brennan Aaronson. Another goal, another great performance for Salzburg, but he was not the youngest American to score in this Austrian Bundesliga game. That would be Taylor Booth, who I believe is on loan at St. Poulton, along with Brandon Cervania, right? Mm-hmm. I think. Yeah. Yep. Booth had a nice goal, man. It was really nice. It was the opening goal in this match. Looked like maybe it was going to be an upset, and it wasn't. Salzburg won, but nice right-footed hit from outside the box. Josh Sargent scored.
Let me go on. But Booth was an RSL kid, and he was the youngest player on that 2017 US U17 World Cup team, the one with Sargent, Tim Weah, James Sams, Chris Durkin. I think Dest was the backup right back on that team. He was backing up Jalen Lindsay. Booth was the youngest player on that team. He went to Bayern Munich. He's not going to be athletic enough for Bayern Munich. He's not going to make it with Bayern Munich, but you could see he still has a ton of talent, and it's a shame. I don't want to say it's a shame that the U20 World Cup this year was canceled. Like, it's appropriate that the U20 World Cup was canceled this year, given the pandemic. But if it hadn't been, this is the type of, like, he could have had a breakout in this tournament akin to what, like, Richie Ledesma had in 2019, or what Paxton Pomacall had in 2019. He he's not going to be good enough for Bayern Munich, but he's a really, really talented soccer player, and he's showing it so far with this small Austrian Bundesliga side.
All right, let's get to the mailbag. It was a great aside for people, but I see a headline here that says, Austin is Vancouver, comma, all caps, idiot.
So, that's for you. That's for you.
Yeah, that seems like it's for me.
Yeah, you read an email about this last week. I don't know where it came from, but Chris responds, and he starts with howdy, so you know it's real. I'm writing in not to suggest a name for this rivalry between Austin and Dallas. In Houston, the supporters will determine that, but instead to comment on something you read on the pod, whoever wrote in saying that Dallas views Austin as the little brother in a Texas rivalry is, in his words, and we're talking about Andrew, an idiot. No one else. We wouldn't call anyone else that. This rivalry will have more to it than Houston versus Dallas could ever dream of. Austin, Dallas are two cities with completely opposite identities who, outside of soccer, notoriously look down upon each other. Not to mention Dallas is the former state capital, and with Austin being the current. So it adds some political historical significance. As an Austin FC fan, I realize these Texas rivalry games have been forgettable for far too long. But trust me, we are here to change this. The Austin versus Dallas game will immediately have more fire, more energy, and more baked intention than some of those half-empty Houston versus Dallas games over the last few
years. Wow. Okay, so let's unpack this right here. Y'all got to stick with me right now. No, I'm just kidding. I just had to throw that in there. I needed to say y'all. I knew from the jump this was an Austin fan, that they were taking offense to the idea of them being the little brother. And of course, they're going to come in here and denigrate some incredible history that there is between FC Dallas and Houston. Okay, well, create your history, Austin. You got to prove that you're a part of it and can contribute to it. Don't talk to me like that you're some like guiding light protagonist when you haven't even played a game in this league against these other two teams. And that's just me reacting to this email. I appreciate you, Austin FC fans. You're awesome. The team looks like it's going to be great. But look, like, you have to find your way in. You don't get to just come in and say that it's going to be us in Dallas. Like, that doesn't make any sense. You have to find your way into this thing. And if you're good, and if you make an impact, and if you come out and beat these teams and become a villain and become part of the narrative, okay. But to say it before, that's pretty rich. Now, the thing is, the email that I did read came from a Dallas fan who was calling Austin the Vancouver. So now you see how this is going to be.
It sounds
really
like
fun.
The rivalry had already
exactly
started.
That's what I was getting and around I'm, to. This is going to be super fun.
And I'm just going to put, like, you don't, like, it's not hard to find your way in because Houston have just left the door wide open. If you look at the last six, 7 years,
the results have been poor.
The results have been very, very poor. And, like, Houston's in danger of becoming, you know, third wheel in this rivalry. So, I mean, 2021 is like low key huge for, I think, shaping the future of this three-way Texas derby.
Doyle, as a San Antonio native, how do you feel?
I do have family in San Antonio, and I do have a favorite steakhouse in San Antonio. I feel like Hill Country is a great place to visit. How about that?
And Doyle is officially the Charles Barkley of this show. And Charles Barkley loves the Riverwalk, unsure. We've got one on Twitter that said, the USMNT has so much talent and potential, but I worry about their toughness required for CONCACAF street fights, quote unquote. Whom in the pool are you counting on to bring the physicality? Anders wanted me to read this question. I didn't, so continue.
I thought you had a take on this.
Yeah,
I was waiting
because
for you
I don't
to jump.
Know the like myth that because you're bad at soccer, you're tougher, and because you're good at soccer, you're not tough. Like, Tyler Adams is 19, 20, starting in Champions League games, in people's face, physical, can do all those things.
So it sounds like you're answering the question with Tyler Adams.
Yeah, we don't need someone who's like a 30. I think the whole concept here is like, oh, when guys, we didn't think they were technically good, then they were physical. I don't know that that's a binary that exists. So, yeah. Tyler Adams, Weston McKinney, all these guys.
I mean, wasn't that like Clint Dempsey was the embodiment of this, no? Like maybe
Clint
not
Dempsey
in a position.
Was skilled and talented.
That's what I'm saying. He's the embodiment of what you're talking about. Like,
his
he might
fire,
not have played in a position where you were like, yeah, go jack him up, like come in two-footed. But, you know, you have the famous Jamaica gif and you have all the different moments, like never back down to anybody, was super physical, but also incredibly technical and talented and understood the game at a higher level and proved it on all fronts. Like that's what we're going for here as a nation. And that's what's so exciting is that it seems like we have a little bit of everything because you don't just win on one of these things, right? Like whether it be CONCACAF or UEFA or CAF or whatever it is or Coma Bowl, like the best teams have incredibly talented players who also are miserable to play against. So that's where we're at, and it's nice. It's nice to have players that are doing both.
That's where we hope we're at.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Let's see it because we weren't miserable to play against in the Gold Cup final in 2019. We weren't. I mean, they were fairly miserable to play against through the rest of that Gold Cup. Then again, that's 2 years ago, and a lot of this pool has come a very long way in the past 2 years. But I wouldn't frame it the way that this guy framed it, but I have concerns about our team's ability to just be SOBs. I really do. I don't have concerns about Tyler Adams doing it. I don't have concerns about Weston McKennie. Gio Reyna's definitely got that. Tim Weah, from what I've seen, is unintimidatable. Same with Serginho Dest. I have concerns about the center backs. I have concerns about the left backs. I have concerns about Josh Sargent, if he's the center forward. Christian Pulisic has beat up on CONCACAF minnows. He's never scored against Mexico. He's never scored against any good teams for the U.S., really. So it's – I mean, well, he scored a big one against Panama on the road, right? That's probably his toughest goal.
And he scored Panama at home in the when we blew them out before Trinidad and Tobago, right?
Yeah, but that was Josie's game. Josie absolutely dominated that game. So it's – I think that there are still concerns. I agree with David. The binary is incorrect. But until this team shows that they can do that, you don't know that this team can do that, no matter how much talent they have.
And that's what 2021 is, right, for national team fans? Yeah. U.S. and otherwise, really, because of sort of the break that's happened
right
across the world.
Right into the cauldron of boiling water. That's
yeah, whether it. Whether it be U23s, and we're starting to see those rosters from across the region come out, and the Olympic qualifying that's coming up, which, of course, we'll cover really closely, or Gold Cup, or World Cup qualifying, like this is that test. We can talk all we want. We can have all these Twitter accounts. We can put out the compilations of what Chris Richards is doing for Hoffenheim. But until we see it with the national team, we just don't know. All right, what else we got here?
Did we do an over-under on Brenner for goals? For FC
no,
Cincinnati?
But you know I love a good over-under. So I'm going
to
set
James
the Brenner.
James Schwartz wants to know goals over-under for Brenner. So I'll set the line.
Okay.
I probably should make it higher than I'm about to. I'm going to say 13.5.
I was at 11.5 or 12.5.
All my money on under. Since he scored 12 goals all of last year. The whole team.
Steve Goff rumors, though, Lucho Acosta is close to potentially heading that
Lucho
way.
Lucho Acosta has three goals and one assist in 2 years. Under. I'm taking under.
Weeby, is it Lucho Renner? Is it Lucho Renner?
I've workshopped this. There's not a...
Brucho?
Or is it
brunch?
A soft CH? Is it
how about brunch?
Oh, yeah, brunch could be a good one. Yeah, Weeby, what'd you say? Over under.
I would say under two. Like everything in me wants to hope for the best for Cincinnati fans right. This season, and I'm tired of rubbing it in.
I'm gonna set another line.
Okay.
10.5.
Oh wow. I mean, they're gonna play 34, so that will change things a little bit.
I'll say over.
Why? Make the case for why.
I don't think he's going to any national team stuff, so he's a full time starter the whole year. Kubo's a year into this league. They've already added other pieces around them. Matarita for service at left back. They're going to be a better team than they were last year. He's an elite goal scorer, even though he's young. He should play a ton of time. 11 goals should be reasonable to get.
Okay. All right. Look, it can't get any worse. So it can only get better for Cincinnati. What else we got here? I like this one from Mike Vermaland. You see that one?
Yeah, do you? No, if you're going to say that, you just read it.
Oh, I thought you were going to read it.
Yeah, it feels like player, my dad being like, what's 7 times 7?
God. I do a lot of that. Yeah, which single player benefits the most from their managerial change this offseason? Chicharito, Higuain, Matuidi, Barco, Gressel, Drew Yearwood, that's a random one to throw in there, or some Toronto FC player. What do you think, Doyle? Which of those
players? So I don't
players,
know that is a random one, by the way. I agree, actually.
Yeah, no, I agree. They bought him. They bought these guys to come in knowing probably that Gerhard was coming. Yeah.
I'll say on this list, an easy one is Julian Gressel, because I think he's an elite wing back in this league, and if that's what Losada plays. If not, okay, question mark. Where you land. But even with Paul Ariola's loan, he probably has a cleaner spot to land. So that's mine, Doyle.
Yeah, I think Gressel's the right answer, just because Losada goes 3-5-2, then you just plug Gressel in out wide as the right wing back, and he looks like it's 2019 again. But Chicharito's a very easy answer as well, because Greg Vanney is a proven high-level coach in this league. The Galaxy, I know their roster is still threadbare, but they're going to bring in some talent, and Chicharito just, judging off his social media, seems kind of renewed as a human being and in a better spot to actually focus on the job.
Yeah, he's hashtag putting in the work right now. I would throw out Higuain in this because I think
hashtag
their roster.
Purpose.
I have me and Justin Bieber are fighting over that trademark right now, so I can't use that legally, but maybe someday. I think Higuain is going to be one in here. I think they have a better roster, and things were so bad for him.
How confident are you in Phil Neville, though? Like, there's still so many question marks about Miami.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, the frame of the question was because of the managerial
change. Yeah, because Higuain's going to be better this year because he's been here for a year. And
so you don't think that'll be because of the managerial change? No, I think Higuain... sort of in spite of,
I think if Higuain had an offseason and played, he's going to score goals this year. He's going to be a good player. He's
okay,
still
fine.
Is.
Let's get one more in before we get out of here. Do we
no,
see any...
we're not going to do that, Weeby. No? You got your 30-second thing.
This
You're
is
out.
So whack. Like, I just, there's so many good ones in here. Maybe we'll have to, we'll have to dig into these. We'll dig into these on Thursdays. Yeah, we'll dig into these on Thursday before we start our season previews. Those start next Monday. We'll have the call up with us next Monday. If you don't listen to the call up, they had Darren Eels on their last show. It was a great interview. Go check them out. Subscribe. And happy International Women's Day.